Welcome to another episode of Pat the Fat Man. We like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Coming at you with another installment from the cult classic children's baseball movie, The Sard Lot. Sandlot.
No, let's try it again.
Sandlout.
Close.
Sund Loot.
You went to college.
It's a degree granting institution.
Starting to think college isn't all it was cracked up to be.
I didn't take any English courses.
So engineer of you.
Yes, most of the letters I saw were Greek and inside of equations.
It's the Sandlot, Pat. It's the Sandlot.
Oh, the Sandlot coming at you with another installment of the childhood baseball classic, The Sandlot. Last we left our intrepid heroes. I can't remember. I got to be honest.
So they got done beating the other kids from Little League. And then
that's right.
They got done going to the fair and chewing on chewing tobacco while getting on the Tilt-A-Whirl.
Oh, yeah.
And they threw up all over the place on the Tilt-A-Whirl.
Yep.
And so we are at the next day after Dad drives himself to the airport with Mom in the passenger seat because he wasn't going to let Mom drive him to the airport.
Yep.
Crap. Yep. Scotty gets back together with the gang. So that way they can go back to their normal summer day routine of playing baseball after swearing off the hard stuff for good and sticking to Bazooka.
Bazooka.
Which, if you don't know, Bazooka was a bubble gum that was wrapped in a piece of paper that in its later days had comic strips on it.
Yeah, I could go over some big league chew now.
I know. Right now in Ohio, watching like the Guardians, Cleveland used to be the Indians in their baseball, and their manager that just quit last year, like anytime you saw him on TV, it was him standing in the dugout next to a big old bucket of double bubble and constantly chewing bubble gum. And I was just like, I want that bucket. I want that bucket of bubble gum. I'm a big fatty that likes to watch baseball. I'm just as much of a manager as he is. Except that he's won two World Series.
Other than the salary and the telling baseball players how to play baseball and then listening to you. Because I tell baseball players how to play baseball all the time. They just don't listen to me.
I know.
I mean, I tell them to play better.
Jerks.
And usually they don't.
Don't they know how many hours and hours I've wasted watching them? Yes.
Play better. I caused someone to go into laughing fits one time when I yelled that at a game.
Play better.
Play better.
Oh, God. I was at a football game and a guy behind me was yelling about how the defensive coordinator, you know, sucks. And funny part was, is like the media for the game said the defensive coordinator wasn't going to be at the game because he had something personal going on or was sick or something. And he keeps yelling. And I'm like, looking back, I'm like, he's not here. No one's gonna care because the guy you're yelling about is not here.
Yes. What are you talking about again? Something, a movie? I don't know anymore.
The guys are getting back together baseball, get out onto the lot, and Hammy is at the plate.
This is a precursor to Smalls going to get a ball, right?
Well, this is the lead up to, you know, the problem.
Right.
The biggest pickle that any
the
of them
biggest pickle
have ever had.
The biggest Rick. Pickle.
Oh, no. It was Benny who hits this thing. Yeah, and this happened really recently in actual baseball, but he hits the cover off the baseball.
Yeah, he explodes the cover off the baseball. Okay, so it's not Ham coming,
right.
It's Benny coming.
It's Benny,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
And so Benny, you know, just crushes this baseball. By the way, the rest of it, Scotty catches. So, you know, he's gotten better. Mm-hmm. The guys are all standing around looking at the casing that's left. Just like this glorious thing. And it would be, I mean, I don't know if I saw it happen.
The Holy Grail.
Yeah, like it's the Holy Grail. And I mean, I would too, because I mean, if you saw it happen in person, you'd be like, what the hell?
I mean, you hit a baseball so hard, you bust the laces.
Right.
I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Like, you hit it just right with just enough force to break the laces off of it. That's nuts.
And the core of it still kept on going.
Yeah, that part's a little, I don't know about that part, but so wait, this actually happened in baseball recently?
Yeah, I can't remember. I'll have to go back and look, but I mean, I remember seeing the highlight of it, and you see the cover go flying and it just dies like a quail on the infield grass, and the guy just keeps running and he makes it, and one of the players picks up and sure enough just throws the ball that's still slightly, you know, with part of its cover, you know, coming off, and throws it over to first because you know the play is not dead, it's technically still going, so you have to stop the play, and then you can marvel at the fact that, you know, the ball's just creamed. But yeah, it was pretty cool. So all the kids are looking at it like it's really cool. And Benny's like, no, man, this ain't cool. Now we can't play baseball.
Like, I love how focused in yet again Benny is. Like, they're all like, this is the most amazing thing we've ever seen in our life. And quite possibly they're all correct. And it's possible this will be the most amazing thing they see in their entire lives for the rest of it. They're all kind of basking in the glow and taking in the glory. And then Benny's like, we can't play anymore. This is bull. And I'm like, you just broke the laces off a ball.
I'm such a
Yeah. And not only that, but Smalls got me out, that bastard.
So they're all marveling, like, what are we going to do? And small Scotty goes, oh, I got a baseball. They're like, what? You got a baseball? Because, yeah, I can go get a ball. So they're like, oh, go get it. Hurry up. Go get it. And they're all yelling, what are you waiting for? Scotty goes all the way home, goes into his stepdad's study where he was told specifically not to go into, goes up to this baseball sitting on the stand and looks at this baseball and goes, huh, I'm sure we could play baseball with that.
Yeah, I...
And this just shows you how, like, you know, not connected to the rest of the world that Scotty is, because anybody who knows that if you were putting a baseball on display, it's because it's special in some way.
Yeah.
Usually because somebody signed it.
I'm going to chalk this up to bad parenting on Bill's part again, because it's just fun.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about just fun, but I mean, it's true, because I mean, how do you not tell your kid, hey, this is going to be worth a lot of money someday. So when I die.
Right.
And I'm not encouraging you to kill me. That becomes yours.
Yeah. Not encouraging parenticide here. But
patricide.
You just think about, like, trophies, right? The concept of having a trophy.
Or patricide.
Right? And, patricide. Yeah. Fratricide would be killing your brother.
Right.
But either way, trophies, right? So every group of people has their trophies, right? Hunters gets their shoot animals and then have those animals stuffed and then hang those trophies on the wall. People who are sports fan get sports memorabilia and then hang those things on the wall or put them in displays cases. Nerds have, you know, books on shelf or giant Lego sets or or dioramas or amazing computers. You know, everybody has their trophies, right? I feel like this is just a missed opportunity, yet another parenting missed opportunity to explain to Scotty, who doesn't know, why he needs to stay the hell out of that room.
Right.
You know, because I think when he goes in there, Bill is kind of like, get the hell out.
He's so here's where we come up to a couple of plot holes that I really didn't think about till just now. So one is, what happened to the baseball that Scotty and Bill were using when they were playing catch?
Right. There has to be at least a normal baseball somewhere in the house, right?
You would think, because, you know, they played catch with one. And then two, when Scotty brings it back to the sandlot, he brings it over to the guys and says, here. And Benny goes, okay, your ball, your ups. Meaning, he, you know, Scotty's ball, Scotty gets the bat. Benny takes the baseball and he gives it over to the pitcher. But nobody, not Benny, not the pitcher. And Benny, knowing that, you know, Scotty's not a baseball kid. So where did he get the baseball? I mean, he just had it. This doesn't seem like the kind of kid that would have a baseball lying around, because you don't know nothing about baseball.
Yeah, this strikes me as one of those times when Benny should have figured it out.
Right, like that nobody looked down and looked over the baseball and go, huh, and where did it come from? Why do you have it? Why is it so dirty? Because we know you don't play baseball. but c'est la vie, nobody catches it.
Or the pitcher, right? Right,
or the pitcher.
Benny or the pitcher. Looking at the ball, right? You just see the name somewhere on the ball.
Yep.
But nobody catches it. Somehow, Benny and I can't remember the name of the pitcher.
Kenny Nunez. Scotty comes up to bat. First pitch, it's, you know, Hammy's obviously doing his trash talking while, you know, behind the batter. Scotty gets a really stupid high pitch and he swings at it, like tomahawk swings at it. And strike one.
Terrible pitch. Terrible swing.
Second pitch goes right over the down the middle. And Scotty just wails. Just perfect swing, perfect pitch. And as the ball's coming towards the camera, you just see the words right on it. Babe Ruth.
Yep. The first time you get a hit as a ball player, it's like, and it's not T-ball, right? It's for, like, you have a pitcher throwing a ball at you. It's kind of a magic moment. Like, you manage to actually connect the bat with the ball and hit it. And it's sort of like time kind of freezes and everything's sort of magical for a little bit, because it's when you think about it, it is literally one of the hardest things to do in sports. Mm-hmm. The percentage of actually hitting a ball are very low.
Right.
Very, very low.
Because, you know, the eye, the hand to eye, the timing, all of it. I mean, like, I think in, yeah, what was it? Someone did the math and, like, on a major league pitcher throwing a fastball, 90 mile an hour fastball, the time it takes for your brain to decide whether or not to swing is like 0.2 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, stupid quick.
Yeah. They're like, why do they keep switching pitchers for left and right handed? I'm like, yeah, sure. It's like 0.05 seconds, but that's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Like, added on to that 0.2 that you've got.
He hits this ball and clearly it's home run. It's going to go over the fence. You know, Benny's chasing it down. Scotty starts doing the home run trot. You know, Hammy's trying to take credit for it. He gets around first, and all the guys, instead of being mad like they were when you know, Hammy, you know, hit the home run, you know, they're like, hey, way to go, Scotty, because, you know, who knew Scotty could do it?
Like I said, that first hit, you get magical, and the fact that this is a home run makes it extra special.
Right. And so as he's running to second, it starts to dawn on him, because he can start looking straight out to center field that way. And it starts to dawn on him, oh, that went over the fence. And he starts to slow down. And all the guys start, you know, high-fiving him. And then he reaches second base, and he keeps walking. Keeps walking to the towards the outfield. And everyone's like, hey, Scotty, you're supposed to go that way, the third base. You got to go to third base. It's over that way.
Where are you going, Scott?
And everyone's still going? Like, not sure what's going on. They're like, hey, way to go, Scott.
Things have started to take a turn. They don't know which way it's going to go.
One of the kids is like, maybe it was too much for him. Maybe it just, you know, fried his brain and shorted them out. The shot of his first homer was too much for him.
Too much for him.
And then, you know, Scotty's standing there and they're like, hey, what's wrong? He goes, no, we got to get that ball back. They're like, yeah, all right. Nope. Yeah, sure. Okay. It's like, no, we really got to go get that ball back, because that wasn't my ball. And they're like, what do you mean it wasn't your ball?
I love the sheer terror on Scott. Like, the actor, the child actor, did such a good job of that. Oh no, I am totally boned. Like, look that children get when they've done something wrong.
I mean, he's a Hollywood kid. I'm sure he knows what it's like to get caught stealing your mom's cocaine.
Hopefully not in that era, but probably.
So they're all like, you know, Scotty's like, oh, it's not my ball. And they're like, what do you mean it's not your ball? It's like, it's my stepdad's ball. And he got it from his trophy room. And it was a present or something. He somebody says sent
trophy room.
Right.
He actually uses the words trophy room. Like, Smalls, why did you do this?
And he's like, we got to get it back. He's going to kill me. Squints goes, listen to me, Smalls. It's very important. It's a matter of life and death, he says. Where did your old man get that ball? He's like, what? I don't know. Some lady gave it to him. And they're like, what lady? I don't know. She signed her name or something. It was Ruth. Baby Ruth. And all at once, it dawns on everyone. They go, Babe Ruth. They all go start running to the fence. And they're all looking and, you know, climbing over to look at and see where the ball is, see if maybe they can make a run for it, where it's at. And of course, where does it land? Right outside the beast's lair.
Yeah. His relatively normal sized doghouse for a giant monster.
Right. Because, I mean, you can tell it's a giant monster because at that moment, a giant bear paw just slams down on top of the ball and drags it into its house.
The dust spray coming out.
And of course, at that moment, it was like everyone seeing Jaws. They're all screaming, running away from the fence. Like, yeah. The beast got it. And everyone's like, and you're dead as a doornail, Smalls. Yeah, you're dead as a doornail. Yeah,
you're dead as a doornail, Smalls. Good old
repeat. And this is great because the one kid's saying it, the other one's reporting it, and finally one kid goes, shut up, yeah, yeah. And Squint's like, that ball was signed by Babe Ruth. And this guy goes, yeah, you keep saying that. Who is she? And it was at that moment that everyone realized that Scotty didn't know who Babe Ruth was. And they're like, Babe Ruth was like the greatest ball player of all time. The great Bambino.
They all realize he doesn't actually know.
And they start naming off, you know, Sultan of SWAT, you know, the Colossus of Crash, and, you know, and then all the other Babe Ruth. And then Hammy finally, you know, spelled it out for him. The great Bambino. Bambino. He's like, that's the same guy. Oh, my gosh.
It's such a good job by that actor. Like, that's the same guy. Like, the expression, the voice, it's all done so well.
It was so great because, like, you know, Benny chimes in, you know, he's like the greatest baseball player that ever lived. He said he was more than a man, but less than a god. And it's just kind of great because, again, it's like, you know, you look at Benny, he's like the baseball person. And that was his demigod, you know, it was Babe Ruth.
Yeah, if he had an altar or a shrine to anybody in his locker, that was gonna be it.
Spoiler alert. And then he tells Scotty, he goes, you know, that baseball you just hit, well, it's worth more than your life. And Scotty goes, oh, I don't feel so good. Falls to his knees. So the other guy's like, all right, Phantom, come on, give him some air, take off their heads, start fanning them.
I like how they all kind of come to his rescue, though.
Right.
Like, that's really how you could tell that Scotty is now part of the group. Because, you know, prior to this, you had the scene where it was evident he didn't know who Babe Ruth was. And they were ready to, like, you know, chuck him under a passing car. But, you know, Benny kind of forced him to take him in. Now he's part of the group. So the fact that he didn't know who Babe Ruth isn't a thing that results in his imminent demise, as far as the group's concerned, he's now one of them. And so how they treat him after this point, I think it's a very good portrayal of what it means to be part of a group versus what it means to be on the outside.
Well, I also think it's that kind of thing where, like, as every kid, you know, when you do a major crime and you're like, I feel like I have to help him because you don't want to know somebody who got murdered because you're afraid that you might get caught in the wake, you know, like maybe his death wouldn't be good enough for that parent. They come after you.
and you know, I mean, they're all accomplices at that point. Right.
Right.
They're all in on it.
Right.
And in the same token, every kid has had that moment.
So it becomes not just a fraternity in the sense that they all play baseball and, you know, they're all part of this special group. It's a fraternity of kids, you know. Yeah. That they know they have to protect this kid from the parents, and, you know, from yeah. all parents.
Right.
And that if one of the others was in this situation, they'd help them out where they could.
Because they would all do it for each other.
That the crime was so severe that they have to help him.
Right. You know, you're always going to help your friends out of trouble if you can, because you're hoping when you screw up that they can help you. You're hoping that there's reciprocation there. That's an important part of the group dynamic.
And so they all come together and they come up with a plan. All right, grab every bottle you can find, scrounge around, turn it in for, you know, the recycling money. And, you know, we got to get 98 cents to get a baseball. And so that's what they do. Next scene is them walking out of the drugstore with a brand new baseball out of a box, which kind of impressed. That's how baseballs came. I'm used to seeing them just in a big old basket in the sporting goods store.
You get like a nice ball in like a, one of the plastic things. I mean, it just depends. But yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And so they get the ball out, and then Benny's got it in his hand with a pen, and he starts signing it, doing his best cursive signature and imitation of Babe Ruth.
You're getting it all dirty. And
you know, the guys are like, I don't know, that looks pretty bad. You know, I don't know if she's going to believe that. And Benny goes, it's, you know, it's mom. She's a girl. She's not going to know what, it, you know, what his signature looks like.
Yeah. What's important is that there's a ball there. Mom's not going to be checking to make sure the signature looks right.
Right.
That's something dad would do, but not mom. Mom sees there's a ball missing. There's something wrong.
You know, in a sort of reverse Indiana Jones kind of moment, Scotty sneaks back into his stepdad's trophy room and starts like, you know, just tries to like stealthily put it back into the, you know, the ball, baseball back into its holder. And of course, you know, at that moment, mom's walking around calling for him, sees him in there, and you know, says, what are you doing in here? Oh, just looking at, you know, bills, dad's baseball. She's like, well, you know, he doesn't like you touching his things. And you're thinking, yeah, he did more than that.
Yeah. Come out of there, honey. If he knew you were in there, he'd beat you six ways from Sunday.
And I'd let him.
Mom. It's odd. Odd flex there, Mom.
Better you than me, sweetie.
Everything all right at home, Mom? The home that I live in? Better you than me. Wow. That went dark. Dark mode activated.
But no one's calling me a liar so far.
Well, I mean, that's why it's dark.
Anyhoots. They're standing there, and mom goes, oh, did Bill ever tell you about that baseball? And he's like, no, I don't think so. No, he hasn't. And mom proceeds to tell that's ball was signed by Babe Ruth. It was the greatest baseball player who ever lived. And then inner monologue, Scotty comes and goes, oh, great. My mom, a grown woman, knew who Babe Ruth was. It's like, yes, kid. Yeah. Not only are you in trouble, but you are worse than your mom when it comes to knowing baseball.
Yeah.
So you're just having a banger of a summer day.
It's all coming up Milhouse, but not Scotty.
And on top of that, the baseball was handed down from Bill's dad. So, you know, it's a family heirloom at this point.
So not only is it a piece of memorabilia, it's a family heirloom, priceless piece of memorabilia. So, you know, good luck with surviving that. I have to admit, if my kids, like, you know, got my copy of X-Men 4 and did something with it, I'd... Yeah. There'd be some consequences.
So then we transition back to the treehouse. They're all sitting there trying to think of ways to get the baseball back. And of course, Scotty, simple-minded Scotty, comes up with the most simplest of plans. Why don't we go next door, knock on the guy's door, Mr. Myrtle's door, and ask for him to get the ball for us?
Nobody would have thought of this plan. It was too simple.
Well, that's true, because none of them did. Because, you know, Squints goes, are you out of your mind? Mr. Myrtle's the meanest man that ever lived.
I mean, he did cut off his own son's hand in a lightsaber battle one time.
The audience doesn't know that yet. Spoilers, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm spoiling a 30-year-old show.
Yeah, you are. You 40? Should feel terrible.
Yeah, I'm not. Sorry. spoilers, man. I'm sorry, I'm not spoiling it then. the same guy who plays the voice actor for Darth Vader is also Mr. Myrtle.
And Mufasa.
Edward James Olmos.
That, what?
No, I don't know why that popped into my head.
I mean, it's just the only thing that connects the two is that the first letters of each of the parts of the name, yes, they are somehow also in each other's names, but they're in the wrong order.
I know, right? I don't know why my brain was like, it's Edward James Olmos. I was like, no, it's not, you moron.
One's a black man and one's Hispanic.
I don't know what to tell you how my brain works.
We're going to have a talk about this, man.
It's like death with his pictures.
Bad dog.
And this is Edward James Olmos. It's a picture of my kid. Oh, wait, no, sorry. It's a picture of Edward James Olmos. Why do you have that in your wallet?
We can't go through that bit because of the end.
Yeah, no. I have to bleep it. We just bleep the whole thing. Maybe just the whole episode. I don't know at this point. We have gone off the rails so much.
So but our pacing's about spot on for how we've been doing this movie. So
yeah, James Earl Jones. Not Edward. Yeah. I don't even know where that came from. Edward James Olmos.
After discouraging Scotty from that, their next brilliant idea is to look out the window. And there's some truly disturbing things when they look out. Like, number one shot is a girl's doll with an arrow through its eye.
You're kind of like, that doesn't make any sense in this situation, but okay. I mean, it's creepy.
And then you see a big old, that's not a ham bone, that's like an entire like human leg laying in the dirt outside of the,
yeah, it's like a femur.
Yeah. And then as they're looking, they see the beast chuck or throw up the ball back out into the yard.
As if to taunt them with the ball.
Right.
Like it's a sentient creature that knows what they desire.
Right, like a lure. Which kind of yeah, adds to the story. This whole, you know, fairy tale kind of thing, you know? Aha, our chance to get the ball, it's within reach.
Yep.
Their first plan is to take a piece of the fence down while Squints is the lookout, and they take a broom handle. I don't know how this was going to work, but just a straight up broom handle, stick it underneath there and try to get the ball back that way. Like I said, Squints is the lookout, telling them how, you know, to go forward, go back, go left, go right. And they, just as they're getting to the ball, the beast comes down right onto the broom handle and then starts tearing at it, starts pulling it. And the kids are fighting back and forth, yelling and screaming. Ah, ah. They even Squints at the top, who's nowhere near it, screaming and yelling. It's this tug of war on the broomstick. And they finally get it back. And the end is all splintered and covered in drool.
Yeah, I love like all of their attempts. They all scream. There's a moment where they almost have it. Then the beast makes its appearance, destroys whatever they were trying to do. There's a fight. Everybody screams. And then it's back to the drawing board in the headquarters, which is now the treehouse.
Right.
And I love how Squints, the blindest kid in the group, is the lookout. I'm going to pick the guy wearing Coke bottle glasses here to be our lookout.
You know, the coolest kid in the group now is the one that tricked the lifeguard, the hot lifeguard, to kiss him. I mean, he's king of the group.
I mean, sure, but like, why does that make him the lookout? I don't,
because he's the one that he's the brains of the group. He's the cool kid, the general, yeah, you know, sitting on high, giving directions to everybody else.
The one who figures it out.
Yes. So the first attempt was a broomstick. The second attempt is an erector set with basically a pot at the end of it, and that they turn the pot over to kind of put the ball underneath it. And of course, this time they actually get the pot over the baseball and are starting to pull it back. And then yet again, the beast gets a hold of it and, you know, fighting back and forth.
Yeah, this was a pretty ingenious setup, I think, with the Erector set.
And it's all happening in the same afternoon.
Yeah. I wonder how many Erector sets it would have taken to do that. Like actually.
At one point in my life, my dad got me an Erector set. I really didn't play with it all that much because I really didn't know what to do with it. Didn't really explain to me, like, you just build stuff. I'm like, build what? I'm like, just stuff. I'm like, okay.
What do you mean by that? Moving on.
I built little things here and there, but nothing really. But anyways, from what I understand, back in the day, an Erector set was the same as like Lincoln Logs or something like that. Like it was a toy that many, many kids had.
Yeah. So it must have been like a collection of these Erector sets used to build this contraption.
Yes, because we do go back to an Erector set after this next attempt. And mind you, all this is happening in the same afternoon. So somehow they did all this quickly enough to do all of this in like the same afternoon.
Kids move at a different speed than everybody else somehow.
Bastards.
Yeah, a group of kids, 10-minute recess. They can get together, make teams, and play like Manhunt on a playground.
Right.
And, you know, for me, it takes like 10 minutes to go to the bathroom. Like kids just, they just move at a very different speed. They can get a lot done.
That's probably why China uses them to make sneakers.
Yeah, well, and everything else. And they make good coal miners back in the day. Oh. And today in China.
So the next contraption is that they get three vacuums together and get the hoses and somehow connect all three hoses to one long metal vacuum extension and tape that to a catcher's mask. And then from on top, from the lookout on their tree house, lower it down to try to suck the baseball up into the catcher's mask and then pull it out from there. So in this attempt, of course, they get it all the way down. And this time, everybody's up in the treehouse. Gwyntz is at the bottom, once again looking through the handmade periscope. And so they get the extension down and then they turn on the vacuums one by one. And it's like something kind of out of like, you know, Back to the Future Part 3, where they're throwing the logs into the fire. So they turn on the one vacuum and they all jerk, you know, as like the pressure from the vacuum kicks on. Nothing happens. Turn on number two, another bigger jerk. Still haven't gotten it up. So, of course, they have to go to number three. Number three comes on and it's full blast, full power. And finally, the baseball goes into the catcher's mask. Yeah. And they finally get it up and they start pulling it up.
Lock one, lock two, lock three, lock lone. Ludicrous speed, go!
So this time they get, and as they're trying to pull the baseball up, the beast, this time you actually get to see the beast's face because the beast decides he's had enough. He's going to bite the metal vacuum extension part and pinch it. Of course, the baseball drops.
Yep.
And at this point, as they're trying to pull it back up, all of a sudden, you hear the vacuum start going into high gear. The fans really ramping up. And the guys, instead of just turning it off, start freaking out. Like, oh, no, it's back. You know, it's pinched. It's going to blow. And they're like, y'all yelling, run. And the kids are all trying to get out in time. Yeah, and yeah. Just as they're about to explode, one kid goes jumping out of the treehouse. Like full-on stuntman jumps somersault out of the treehouse.
Out of the treehouse.
The treehouse, you see like a smoke bomb go off. Just boom.
Dust everywhere. The demise of three vacuums instantaneously as they explode onto Scotty.
And then they're like, oh, the beast is more clever than I thought. We're going to have to go back to the drawing board.
I love, like, you get more and more of the puppetry work as you go through these giant monstrous puppets being used to kind of display this dog that is, you know, in reality, it is a big dog, but it's a dog. But, you know, through the puppet work, it is the beast, right? It's this giant monstrous thing.
And what I loved about it is, like, as all the kids, were getting out of the treehouse, there's this great scene of them all running away from it. And diving on into like a dog pile, and you see Scotty pick his head up and yelling and screaming, like looking right into the camera, yelling, screaming, "Hit the deck! Hit the deck!" Now, funny enough, because I got it stopped at this moment, and I'm looking at this scene, and the treehouse is not in the sandlot. The treehouse is in one of the house's backyards.
Yeah.
Because you could see the house to the left, and then to the right, you see like a row of bushes against the fence and some shrubberies. Like nice landscaping done. So this wasn't done at the sandlot, even though you believed it was, because that's where the treehouse was in the sandlot.
It continues to beg the question, whose treehouse is this? How did it get built? Why is it there? How come they can use it?
Well, like I said before, I thought the treehouse was in the sandlot because, you know, that's where, you know, they hit the ball from, was from the sandlot.
No, it just, it's a tree. It's a treehouse. Yeah, you know, they just happen. It's a super sturdy, can hold like 12 kids.
Oh, not one kid. He's like, "We've been going about this all wrong. I blame myself."
Is that Squints?
No, it wasn't Squints. It was one of the twin brothers.
Yeah, that's right. "We've been going about this all wrong. I blame myself." He's wearing goggles, isn't he? Or something like that.
No, he's just covered in dirt because he didn't make it out of the tree.
That's right. He's covered in dirt. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It wasn't Scotty that didn't make it out. It's one of the twins.
Oh, the next attempt is just fan freaking tastic. So they rig up this pulley system. And they get into kind of like a cradle thing while wearing the catcher's vest, and which they get Hammy to pedal to lift him up out of the air, and then they use ropes to kind of position him to where he needs to be to pick up the balls, and they start lowering him down. Hammy reverses his pedal to lower him down, and how he does this without dropping him is amazing.
You know, the biggest question in my mind is not this system of pulleys that they've constructed somehow. It's where did they get that thing that Yaya's laying on? Like, where did that come from? Because that's a specialty tool. Like, it's not like a bunch of rope that you could find, like, laying around in a garage or something. Like, those kind of harnesses.
No, it wasn't. It's just rope tied to the catcher's vest.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I thought he was laying on it. Oh,
no, okay. No. He has ropes attached to a catcher's vest. And so he gets to the ball and he's like telling him, "All right, you know, get me out of here." And then as he looks up and he's face to face with the beast, and he just sees
the beast.
And then, you know, they're like, pull him up. And of course, hearing, you know, his feet come loose from the pedal system. And all of a sudden, yeah, it's just sitting, hanging in midair like a piece of salami, yelling and screaming.
Just waiting to get eaten.
Right. And then, of course, you know, they pull him up. And as they're pulling him up, what does he do? Instead of just throwing the ball back over the fence, no, he drops it. And what's crazy, they get him up, they're pulling him up, and they get him over the fence. As he's coming across, he does his thing, he takes his finger and goes, like he's going crazy. He's like, stupid crazy, because, you know, I was almost faced with death.
I love how, like, you have a person watching out, and the beast still somehow sneaks up on.
Right.
Yeah. Like, he's face to face. Like, before Squints yells out, "Hey, the beast is coming." Like, how exactly did that happen? Because, Squints, you should have been looking. Again, why did we have the kid with the Coke bottle glasses as the lookout? Because he utterly and completely failed. He should have been able to tell them the beast was coming a lot sooner than he's face to face with Yaya. Or Yaya.
And so we come to the final, well, not the final attempt, but what we think at this point in the movie is the final attempt, the grandiose attempt, all of the engineering genius they can possibly do. And we're going back to the erector set. They build this huge contraption with wheels and whatnot that goes over the fence. And it's kind of like a cage system. And what goes into this cage system is a rolling catapult. That goes right down the cage to the bottom, And once it's down there, they're using electrical systems to get it to go forward, lower the arm, which separates. That way they can get up underneath the ball. And then they close the arms, gets up underneath the ball, and then launches the baseball, supposedly trying to get it over the fence. This is a huge erector set. This is like 5 erector sets full of material here.
20, who knows?
Yeah. Plus the electrical wiring to go with it.
Yeah.
In fact, that these kids can wire this thing like this is pretty impressive.
Kids used to learn that stuff when they were kids.
Huh. I didn't get taught.
No, that's like I said, that's part of the problem of like we were Scotties, Bruce. we grew up with stepdads. There's perhaps a reason we aren't able to do all of the things.
So we get the ball in the catapult and all the guys are on their side of the fence waiting for it. And they launch the ball, and just as it's about to get over the fence, the beast comes over and swallows the ball. Like he just midair, not catches it, but like swallows it. You don't know how you could say it anything other than that. I mean, it goes in his mouth. And so all the guys are looking at this going, oh my God. And then the beast turns on their whole erector set and starts tearing it apart, shaking it, rolling it, throwing it back over the fence at them. And they're like, oh no, we're doomed.
Yeah.
That was it. That was all the genius we could handle.
I want to say this is the biggest puppet you get to see.
Yes.
Like this giant monstrosity that comes up and eats the ball as it's flying in the air. Like no better hope crushing scene in a movie can you find. Like this is just it gets under the ball, everything's working, fires that ball into the air, it's soaring, they're all like, we're gonna get it back, you know, Smalls isn't gonna have to die, and the beast just comes out of like nowhere,
right?
And just swallows the ball whole.
Like you said, it was like the first time you really see the puppet. When I was a kid, I mean, I thought it was a real dog. Later it is a real dog, yeah. But I mean, at first, when I first saw this movie, I thought it was a real dog. But no, you see it now, and you're like, oh no, that's
definitely a puppet.
A puppet. And it's not the same puppet as the one that you saw eat the baseball.
Right. This is a different, larger, more extreme puppet.
Like the one that ate the baseball could have seriously just been a head on a stick and you wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
I mean, with the failure of the last one, they all start doing like a dirge walk, you know, a death march, you know, out of the backyard. Older Scotty goes in this montage, but just as I learned Bill's trust and became man of the house, I had to knock a priceless chunk of history into the clutches of a monster.
Such a great summary of the problem.
And he goes home and he has this nightmare that a giant baseball signed by Babe Ruth was falling out of the sky and hammering me into the ground like a railroad spike. I didn't know what it meant. And it said, so then this is where if you are a baseball person, you're like, yeah, this would be great. Scotty says that Benny that night also had a dream that was more helpful. Funny enough, Benny dreaming that he's in bed at home, you know, with all of his lights on and all of his baseball memorabilia. And it's like there's an earthquake happening in his house. The room is shaking. The lights are flickering and he doesn't know what's going on. And suddenly his closet door just flies open and standing there is a guy that's supposed to be Babe Ruth, but he's all staticky like he's out of TV because that's the only place that Benny's ever seen Babe Ruth is on TV.
Yeah,
for whatever bits that he could.
Standing there, it's Mike Wazowski. We need your laughter, kid. Sorry, different movie.
Hey, Ruth's like, I'm here to give you to help you out, kid. As he comes walking into his room, and he goes, "I hear you're in a bit of trouble."
It's interesting because you don't get the I think in a modern movie we would have seen an animatic of Scotty getting crushed by the baseball and driven into the ground. But you don't get that in this. It's just the voiceover.
Right.
As you slip into Benny's dream.
Right. Because apparently that's the important part here. Because, yeah, this is kind of the epiphany that the hero has. You know, that moment that, you know, suddenly the powers that be, God, or, you know, that prophetic moment.
Yeah.
And so the first thing that, of course, Benny does is he fawns over him. He's like, you're Babe Ruth, you know, the Sultan of SWAT, the king, you know, the king of crash, you know. And he's like, yeah, I've got a whole bunch of these names. But he tells the kid something important there, and he goes, don't go peeing your pants. And Benny goes, what, I thought you were dead. He goes, I am. He goes, but legends never die. That's what'll hit Benny the hardest here in this scene, is that fact that legends never die. So you got to do something great. You got to do something that you'll never forget, that no one will ever forget.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, here, you got this baseball. And he's like, yeah, but there's this big beast over there. And he goes, oh, just hop over there and get it.
Benny's like,
It's just kind of this really cool moment in front of his hero that he feels he can tell him anything. He's like, it's like, there's this big gorilla dog thing over there, and, you know, that ate a kid. And then he was like, come on, kid.
Even Babe Ruth's like, nah, come on, man. Everybody knows that's a made-up story.
Babe Ruth says, let me tell you something. Everybody gets one chance to do something great. Just once. Most people never take the chance, either because they're too scared or they don't recognize it when it spits on their shoes.
Yeah.
He goes, this is your big chance. I love that, you know, at age 8, this is his big chance.
This is it. That is the kind of grandioseness of youth. It's now or never. And I'm like, no, you've got another like 60 years, bud. And it is definitely not now or never. But
well, and he tells me, he goes, you know, that baseball you hit the guts out of the other day, someone was trying to tell you something. And if I was you, I'd listen, which is kind of a cool moment. Because like, if you're Benny, you're like, oh, you know about that? The great Babe Ruth knows about that.
Yeah.
And then so he tells Babe Ruth, what should I do? He goes, well, you're the one with the rubber legs. You tell me. And of course, in his dream, Babe Ruth gets a hold of a baseball card Benny holding that Penny has, you know, tucked away in this case, small little case fitted for the card. And it's one of Hank Aaron. It says Henry Aaron on it. He goes, I don't know why, but can I have this? Babe Ruth says. And of course, what's Benny going to say? No. And he's like, yeah, sure. Nope. Yeah. And I guarantee when he woke up, that was the first thing he went looking for. Where's my card?
Yeah. Is my Hank Aaron card still here? Did I really give it to Babe Ruth last night?
Did that fat guy steal my card?
Turns out it wasn't a dream. It was just a guy dressed as Babe Ruth broke into my house to steal my Hank Aaron card.
The little model airplanes, he says. Well, we're not buying it.
Brake pad fairy.
At the end of this dream sequence, Babe Ruth speaks to Benny and says, remember, kid, there are heroes and legends. Heroes get remembered, but legends never die.
Legends never die.
And you'll follow your heart and you'll never go wrong. Plus, come on.
I say it's kind of an interesting mix of sort of strange metaphors there. You have the follow your heart and nothing goes wrong, which, you know, in real life doesn't really play out exactly quite like that.
Yeah, usually when you follow your heart, they're usually giant mistakes.
Yeah, well, not necessarily giant mistakes, but there's always consequences. And a lot of people like to believe that follow your heart means there's consequence free, and I'm like, no, that's not what that means. And the other one, which is, you know, heroes
are remembered.
You know, heroes get remembered, but legends never die. And you think about like the kinds of things you have to do to become legendary, typically involve a large amount of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So you talk about like Olympic sports heroes, right? Mm-hmm. That was their life, doing that thing, whatever that was, that they won the gold for, silver or bronze, or not even the thing they just did. Like, that was their whole life for a huge amount of their life. Mm-hmm. Maybe a quarter of their life was doing that thing. You can go on from sports. You could talk about legendary writers or legendary musicians. You know, people who are generally legendary had to sacrifice a lot to get there, right?
I think in our age, there's really one person you can always point to, and I say it because who else do you know that's had this kind of impact on sports in general but Tom Brady?
Yeah.
The 7 Super Bowls that he won, and in the end, he couldn't quit when he knew he should have. In the end, it cost him his marriage.
Yeah.
But everyone knows who Tom Brady is. You know, and to a certain degree, you know, like LeBron James. But the problem with LeBron James is there's that fight between LeBron James and Michael Jordan on who's the greatest.
No one's going to remember LeBron. Everybody will remember Michael Jordan. I don't care who you are. And that's because
one can top whatever he did, which was come up with shoes that are tied to an athlete.
The Jordans.
Right.
He was one of the best players of all time during the height of that sport's is fame.
Right.
Basketball is not the sport anymore. It's football. There was a short window in the 90s where basketball was the sport and Jordan was at the top of it. It takes a lot to become like a legend in anything. You know, you kind of have that mixed in with the fall of your heart. You'll never go wrong, which is not necessarily what makes a legend a legend. Right. A lot of those folks have to not follow their hearts and stick with the course, right? And go with becoming a legend, making the sacrifices that takes to get there. So it's an interesting vignette. Like, and it seems, you know, when I saw it as a kid, it didn't really dawn on me like this was the thing that caused Benny to do what he did next. Cause, you know, as a kid, I didn't really care about literary functioning or story arcs.
Like so many kids' movies, this is, and I guess maybe filmmakers think that it's pressed upon the adults to explain it to kids, but it's kind of hard because it's such a, when you're a kid, that's kind of a heavy-handed thing to put on a kid, right?
Yeah.
But the age group this is for, there's no way you as a kid would really understand it. Maybe it's the one in a million. That kid that decides when he's watching this movie, that's what he was going to do. And like nothing will convince him otherwise. He's going to be the greatest baseball, football, basketball. And then his life becomes dedicated to that. And like you said, everything else is sacrificed to that cause.
Yeah. So interesting message we get from Ghost, but not Ghost Babe Ruth, because he's a legend and legends never die.
Right. I think this is a perfect place to stop.
We may actually finish on the next one.
Yes.
I say may because we have down to the wire this with Red Dawn, I think, like where we spent literally an entire episode talking about 10 minutes.
Now we got the pinnacle hero moment coming up and then the epilogue.
Yep. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode, joining Pat and the Fat Man for Sandlot Part 4. Remember, we've got a website, patthefatman.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. The Fat Man has a Twitter handle, at the Fat Man, or an X handle. Do they call them handles still? I don't know.
Account.
Yeah. And if you have the desire for the show to continue on, please consider supporting us. $1 a show or $1 a month. We put out more shows than once a month. We try to, at least. $1 a month gets you access to all of our Patreon library, which includes a number of past episodes and future episodes coming. We are shooting for one Patreon episode a month this year in year of our Lord 2024. So if you'd like to support us, we would really appreciate it. And $1 a month does go a long way. $5 goes even more. So, you know. Just think about it.
Well, that and like and share on whatever medium platform. If we're not on the platform, come to one of ours. Let us know. I'll put something out there. I'll get, I'll get an account running. Spread us, take clips, share with people, you know, so that way we get some traffic and get other people listening. So that way, you know, we can share this burden together and keep coming up with great content for you guys.
Yeah. And podcasts do have a tendency to spread by word of mouth. So please mention us to your friends, families, and strangers you meet on the street. And I am sort of not joking. Like, seriously, mention us. Like, that is how podcasts typically spread, is via word of mouth. So if you enjoy our content, our super deep dives into movies, we would really appreciate you telling other people about us. So once again, I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
killing me, Smalls.
Scotty doesn't know. Oh, Scotty doesn't know. Oh. So don't tell Scotty. Scotty doesn't know. Scotty doesn't know.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done.
Can we get back to what we're supposed to be doing now?
Scotty doesn't know. Scotty doesn't know. Scotty doesn't know. What? Scotty's got to go. What? Scotty doesn't know. You know it's coming. It's been coming since we did the first episode.
I gave you a chance when I paused, and then I moved on.
You moved on too early, sir.
That's what she said.